Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Horticulture Week podcast. I'm Rachel Forsyth, senior reporter at Hort Week, and this week we are joined by two very special guests from Malim. Can you guys just introduce yourselves and your role at Malim?
Thomas O'Mahony, Managing Director at Malim.
Alistair Bayford, Business Development Director.
Fantastic. Oh, I'm so pleased to have you both on the podcast today. And I'm going to start in December when you won the Grand Award at Bali National Landscape Awards. You've had some time to kind of dwell on it now, I suppose, and soak it in. How did that feel to win that award?
Great. Really good. No, it's amazing win. I think when you look at a job way back when we started Exchange Square probably 2-3 years ago, or when we looked at the concept of it, I think it was always that job we thought would be special. And to win an award for it was fantastic, especially after like 7 years ago when we won One Tower Bridge. You know, it's quite a special award, and it was good for us and good for a team, because it was a lot of hard work for a good client through COVID. And yeah, to win a grand award out of that, it was just the icing on the cake for last year, especially in our 20-year anniversary. It was actually perfection. You know, it was a good way to end it.
Cherry on top.
Yeah. A very big cherry on top it was. Yeah, it was. Very much so.
An apple on top.
a big apple on top.
What about you, Alistair? How did it feel for you?
I think it's personified in the staff and their reaction. I think I've seen a picture online of you know, particularly Liam and Michael, who were quite central to kind of delivery. Their faces said it all for me. But Tom kind of touched on it, a good client. You really do need a good client that believes in a scheme like Exchange or any public realm scheme has seen it important to invest in an open space. You know, Exchange Square particularly, there's 4 times more green space than there was when we started. And that, I think, has played right through to what tenants are prepared to pay for rent, knowing that they've got that resource right on their doorstep.
So it's Exchange Square that you won the award for. What do you think made that stand out against the rest of the competition? Because there was some stiff competition in that, in your categories, some amazing projects, but what do you think made it stand out?
The whole concept of the design was one thing. I think it's different. It looks different. It's for a space of its kind. It's using a lot of different materials. The different levels, working with the different levels. But I think the most thing for it was logistics. It was a very tricky project. So sitting atop a Liverpool Street station, you know, so it involved a lot of demolition of water, a lot of cutting down to the actual roof slab over the station. And then building back up in different layers so you don't take the weight off the actual roof slab. So logistically, and it, even though it's a square, it all sits on a podium. So it's all fed from one level below, ground level, onto level one. So everything which was basically was through the site clearance, demolition, had to go back out the same way, and everything new came in the same way. So it was a very tricky job. It was, and in a very quite quick speed of time, it was done probably just over a year.
Oh, wow.
So it was a really fast tracked project, you know. So, but what made it good? I think you've got to get the courageousness for British Land as a client. They really, to go and build a square like that in the middle of London, you know, and it had no return for them. It's basically, it's not a new building with a massive public space around it. It's not. It's just a public square in the middle of their actual Broadgate estate. So, yeah, as a job, it was, I think we knew once we saw the concept design and got involved really early on in tender pre-construction stage, I think it was always something special about the project. And I think I get that now as I walk through. I leave Liverpool Street Station every now and again, and I'll always take a diversion around, and you walk into it and you walk from a really busy Liverpool Street Station and you walk upstairs into it, and it's just calm. And it is calm. And that's what I really like about this place. You know, it is well designed, well looked after, and we believe it was well executed. Yeah, quality was really good. And yes, there was some really stiff competition. Yeah. You know, really stiff competition. And I think when we looked at it way back, when you get the kind of the announcement of who's in your categories and all the categories through, and every contractor does the same. You look at who's in the categories, and you kind of boil it down to, you start minimizing, okay, it's down to kind of the top 10, and you kind of think, oh, we're in the top 10, you know, and it is like that. You get excited about it. And then you get to the day of the awards, and then you get all the doubts in the world. Now, we're not good enough. We weren't good enough. It hasn't been delivered well enough. And yeah, you just accept. And then, yeah, when you win it, you can see the reaction. There were some videos there of actually us jumping up. It meant a lot. It meant a lot to us as a team. You know, I think we've grown a lot in the last 7 or 8 years, and since the last grand award we won, when people didn't really know who we were. So we had a lot to do. You won the premiership then, and you had to kind of, we stayed quiet for 7 or 8 years. And then before we knew, we had this kind of really good job to enter. Yeah. Yeah. Excitement.
Yeah. And to add to what Tom said, you talk about the delivery aspects and the complexities and the design and its ultimate execution. If you then look at the ESG kind of elements, whereby sustainability, there was 1,000 tons of CO2e reduced from REBA stage 2 to completion. There was 280 tons of kind of circular economy in all of the granite that was kind of recovered from a dismantling strategy. So that was one of the things that was focused on quite heavily at the start, was rather than just demolish it, let's almost undo the construction of the original scheme by dismantling it and using a lot of wiresaws and
lots of water,
get, you know, ultimately get something that's recoverable and reusable. So that went up to Sunderland to be used in bleacher seating on the kind of the foreshore.
Oh, fantastic.
So those aspects are quite important, and I think probably weren't necessarily a common theme against our competitors.
Yeah.
And then if you look at training and skills, I think we've got three guys that have, you know, now they're project managing projects of their own that ultimately have cut their teeth on a project like Exchange. It's something that has set a benchmark for, I think, the industry. You know, if you look at it in its entirety, not just the quality of the job that was installed, some of the bits that go with that and which contractors must now be thinking about was central to it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking about some of those challenges you're facing, you kind of touched upon some of them, but they were pretty high stakes, right, if anything went wrong?
Yeah, the stakes where you look at, you've got to understand it was sitting on top of Liverpool Street Station, so all the main lines out the station. If the roof deflected even 10, 15 mil, when you were offloading the roof, the train stopped, you know, if you had water ingress into the station below. And so we set up monitoring points all over the actual project, which were that was your first operation, which were bolted onto the actual roof of the slab. So they worked on deflection, and they were monitored on a 24-hour basis. So we offloaded the slab, filled the slab back up, reloaded it with the new material, and that was our mechanism all the way through. Netball Rail were there all the time. There was proper stakeholders, and then on top of all the offices looking into us, which I suppose COVID did make it easier, because they were predominantly kind of half empty, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think definitely COVID made it easier with the actual phasing of the works, because the phasing of the works had to work around pedestrian movements, bars, restaurants, etc. So it had all that, and then the logistics. So first thing is work with Railtrack, unloading everything, and then trying to build everything. And then in phases and sequences. We had to build a building, we'd bring trees in, landscaping. So it was an all-in demolition, civil engineering, heavy civil engineering project with then a fantastic landscape on top with a building. So it had all elements of that. You know, it really, really, one of the jobs you see in paper and go, we've got to win that, and then we've got to deliver it. And then when you get the stage, you've won the project and go, right, how do we deliver this? And you get that kind of, and it's that lovely feeling. I think what Malem is, we like them logistically challenging projects, something which is a little bit tricky because a lot of our guys are, we've got a lot of landscape horticulturists in our business, but we have got a lot of civil engineers. And that's what they do. They like a challenge.
Yeah.
So it's like you see everyone running away.
Yeah.
We're running towards it. Yeah. It's kind of that.
It is, yeah.
It's an inherent, it's in the DNA of Malem.
And that's it. And I thought you look at that central part of London, really right in the middle of Broadgate, Liverpool Street, kind of Bishopsgate. You can look at the project around there. We've done probably 24 projects in the last kind of 10 years. Really right, logistically challenging, you know, working in the city, working with the hours of 2 hours breaking on, noise on, 2 hours off, 2 hours on, and you kind of get used to it, and you kind of, it's something you just enjoy. Well, we enjoy it. We just, yeah. And it's engineering at its highest degree, and then landscaping, you know, because the biggest thing is that most of the project, the duration of the project, was physically dismantling site clearance and building up. Yeah. And then really the last kind of 4 months, 5 months was when you actually put down the landscaping, the hard landscaping, finish off the water features to put soft in. That's generally what it was. So it was, it was a lovely job. Yeah, really, really exciting job.
You know, I think COVID presented a challenge and an opportunity beyond what kind of Tom said. We're a very touchy-feely contractor, so we like to get out and see our supply chain.
Yeah.
Hold our supply chain to account. And that was incredibly difficult because we couldn't get to Italy and Portugal and see the Terrazzo particularly being made. Yeah.
So how did that work?
You just have to do it remotely. trust at the
cameras, phones, and walking around factories with people with phones, and it was that's the only way you could physically do your quality check. So someone's material was coming over, you know, was it unchecked? It was checked by FaceTime, but you can't be touchy feely walking into a factory, measuring it, feeling it. Does it work? Does it fit? That's the challenges you had, you know, on bringing it to the air. So it was. There was a lot of that. And then there was a lot of blackened steel on the project, which was something quite new. And to get the blackened steel on the kind of the steel work and around the building, tricky, really tricky. And then again, you're working with suppliers in Ireland, basically trying to get this blackened steel, trying to get it all to blend through. Yeah, it, like every project, they all got challenges. This one just had a little bit extra challenges. Yeah, it had a lot. and it was speed. And the client wanted it finished. You know, they wanted to really have it done while people were kind of away from their offices, and when they come back it's that wow factor.
And
I can't wait for this summer, because really you look at last summer, I think people started to come back to the office, and you had a lot of people around there. This year you've got a new coffee shop opens in there, it's the office is a lot fuller, and I think you walk in there and kind of the next couple of months, spring, kind of April, May onwards, it will be beautiful. It's a space where people will just congregate at lunchtime, you know. It's, you look at that, it's in the middle of Broadgate.
Yeah,
fantastic.
It is a beautiful, beautiful project. And you spoke about that kind of 7-year gap between entering one and entering another. Mm. So what is it that kind of makes you think, that's a Bali project, we're going to enter that?
As I think I said earlier, you've got to see it. I think once you know a design, when you see a design from the beginning of the concept, from when you've won the project, you get that wow about it. You know it's like it's got something iconic about it. I think to win a Bali award, you've got to have the quality, the delivery, the logistics, all that. But it also has got to have something about it. I think like One Tower Bridge, when we won that years and years ago, it was the first time we ever entered Bali for a Bali award. And I remember going through, we won the Principal Award, and we were ecstatic we won the Principal Award that day on One Tower Bridge. Then to win the actual Grand Award that day was just, we did not expect that whatsoever. Mm. So,
neither did the industry.
No,
who's this?
They didn't know who we were. Who's Malem? You know, and we are very much, we did keep onto the radar a lot. And we do still. Yes, we enter every year, we enter the projects. And I think you have a feel which ones will win and which ones don't win.
Yeah.
So 7 years, it's a big gap, but, you know, it was special. I think on the 20-year anniversary, it was special.
Yeah.
You know, because it's been good growth in Malem. It has been a really kind of, I wouldn't say bumpy. It's been a good progression, and trying to bring new people in and trying to get new projects, different clients. But to win a Grand Award, it is, yeah, it's I think you'll see my reaction when it won. I was ecstatic, you know, because it's good for just not for Malum. It's great for the team.
Yeah.
You know, it's a massive thing for all the people around us. And it's good for clients and to have our client there, who basically John Shurabat, who really backed us all the way. You know, that project could have easily been shelved because of COVID, because of, you know, it's given no return. And it could have been, and they courageously went ahead and just said, right, build it, and that took courageous. And we met him every couple of weeks. We walked around it. He's that kind of character where he's bubbly. He wants the project to succeed. He wants everybody in that project to succeed. And we've just done another job with him over at Trident Square. Same client, same personnel, and exactly the same. You know, we got PC last week, and the email came through of, well done, guys, well done. You don't get that much from clients, and that is a client you want to work for, and you want to bend over as far as you can to really kind of get that job to succeed. And we all wanted it to succeed, and it did. And you win a grand award, you can't. That's the ultimate, you know.
Yeah.
And probably now you're going to come back and win it again.
Yeah, so, yeah. Speaking of, do you have any exciting projects in the pipeline that you can talk to us about?
I think Thomas just mentioned Triton's really interesting.
Yeah.
Lots of complex structures, kind of steam-bent oak pavilions, a 400 square metre green wall on a UKPN substation. You know, it's a water and electric
and water.
You love that.
We do, yeah. Love it.
I mean, for me, I think Tideway is going to be an interesting one.
Yeah.
Three very complex new kind of embankment foreshore schemes above the super sewer. Really high spec.
Yeah.
Really interesting in terms of levels and detailing, so that's going to be a project to look out.
And they include working next to Thames, they work building structures. Again, a real lot of technical detail on those, but they're probably a little bit off. They're probably a couple of more years off, I think, before they get finished.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. There's a lot.
Yeah, FCDO, so Foreign Commonwealth Development Office. We're working there, delivering a kind of a courtyard scheme. That again is very different actually for a kind of an organisation or a government body like themselves to be thinking of high quality open spaces for their, you know, colleagues and those that use the building. So that's going
to
be really
interesting. Are you seeing that happen a bit more now? I feel like with the hybrid working, people are trying to bring people back to the offices a little bit, and maybe green space is one of the ways that they're doing that.
Yeah, I think the thing about a lot of the, I hate to show my age now, but a lot of the projects we're actually working on now, like Trident Square, Paddington, we're actually 15, 20 years ago, we actually paved those in grey granite. Now, we're going back to projects which I thought they'd last 20, 30 years, taking out the granites and actually putting in a lot of soft spaces.
Yeah.
Like Triton was one of them examples. And it, I would say, I don't know the real statistics, but probably 60% of the area is now soft, at least, and it is stunning. It's really, really cool.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that is happening. I think they have to bring more green back in. Whereas if you looked at 20 years ago, hard landscaping or public spaces were predominantly really hard and predominantly very grey, I would say.
And quite transient.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You look at Bishop Square in Spitalfields. I mean, that's a project that, you know, we're working on right now. That was built in 2005, big Foster scheme. Mm-hmm. Predominantly lawns and kind of footways, and now it's a kind of a complex mix of seating spaces within kind of soft areas, primarily designed to get people to stay and to eat and to socialise and to gather. And I think all public realm is starting to go that way, and it's, you know, that I think there's benefits everywhere.
Absolutely.
We can kind of draw on the ecology, we can talk about offsetting climate change, we can talk about real estate values, or just great
health
places for people to be.
That's
absolutely it.
It's good, and I think there's some good projects out there. You know, we're looking at, got a lot of projects in the pipeline tendering, and we got probably, it's about 28 projects at the moment out there. A lot of work in Battersea. We've done phase one, phase two of Battersea Power Station.
Yeah,
that opened just for Christmas.
Project.
Yeah, we're now on phase 3B. Down there, which opens in probably September, October. We're on phase.
So what's that phase involving?
That phase is now running from the station. So basically from Battersea Power Station, the actual new Northern London Line. That actually is a new public space, kind of upper tiers, lower tiers, through retail.
Amazing.
To actually get to the new power station itself, to the actual power station. So yeah, got 6B, which is a temporary landscape project, which that we're now also involved in. And then Nine Elms, we're on Nine Elms Linear Park for Royal Mail. We're on Roof Gardens at Telford Homes in the same area. Then we're at the Multiplex 19 Hours project, which I've just come from this morning, which is seven Roof Gardens, and then a huge landscaping project to a new hotel. So yeah, it's that Battersea area at 9 Hours. It is a vast amount of work. You know, the next 4 or 5 years, it is, and it's a lot of green. There's a lot of green down there. You know, it's a really high intensified of landscape. So creating creating an environment of space and in all these new residential areas, it's busy out there. And clients are definitely, the landscaping is a big focus. It's a big focus now. It's just not a bit of paving on the outside, a few shrubs. It is changed. That landscape, the clients have changed over the last 20 years. And now it's their big schemes and complex schemes and high quality and high, it's exciting to be in.
Because obviously biodiversity net gain is going to become mandatory this year. And I think some people are concerned it might be a tick boxing exercise. Yeah. People are going to find ways around it. It sounds like actually developers or whoever your clients are that you're working with are really keen and passionate about the landscape, and they won't see it as a tick boxing exercise.
No, I don't.
I think we've seen Briam come, and you know, some of our schemes have certainly been contributing to achieving kind of excellence via BREEAM standards. Biodiversity net gain, I think there's numerous views about how effective it will be.
Mm.
But when you start talking about 30-year commitments, it does start to ensure that whatever's invested at the start is for the long term and rather than just being this kind of short-term solution. Because as Tom's described, and even, you know, it makes me feel old because I've gone in and retrofitted or removed and replenished open spaces that I built at the start of my career.
Full circle moment.
Yeah, and you kind of think back then you considered to be whatever you were doing was almost future-proofed. But if schemes are only lasting 10 to 15 years, and we're talking about kind of net zero carbon and looking at full life cycle carbon, then that doesn't make sense, does it? Because you're designing something for, you know, a 50-year design life.
And take it back out again.
Doesn't make 15. Just think of the resources involved in that. So I'd like to think biodiversity net gain is some kind of catalyst for long-term commitments in certainly green infrastructure. That's for sure.
Definitely. And there's some also debates about on-site as opposed to off-site. So if you can't achieve it on-site, you achieve it off-site. But if you're not providing it on-site, are you taking that away from the communities there? Or are we asking too much of the on-site, especially in, you know, built-up city centres? Do you have any opinions about that?
I think schemes are getting greener. That's certain.
Yeah.
You know, we are seeing huge investments in green infrastructure in urban sites. Certainly our commercial sites are a lot more green.
Whereas before they were predominantly easy maintainable hard spaces, if that makes sense. Now they're 60-70% green spaces with lots of roof gardens.
That's
the big change.
If they can't deliver it at ground level,
it's
elevated in kind of terraces and podiums.
Yeah.
But the whole thing about, I suppose, what is a space for? That's the predominant. So I'm a believer in that sometimes, I guess, planners, master planners try to fit too much into a space. And actually you end up with these very small areas of nothing because they can't really perform as intended because they're so isolated.
Yeah.
But then if you look at some of the things coming forward in terms of master planning, Canada Water is green.
Yeah.
It's built on its public realm and it's importantly its existing landscape.
Yeah.
Thamesmead is the same.
Mm.
You know, if you look at Earls Court, that's going to be hugely focused on the public realm rather than the building. So on-site provision is certainly a focus for many developers because I think they see the value in it.
Yeah.
And in projects like, you look at a lot of work in the central London, like Bishopsgate, around the kind of corporation, them buildings now, the projects we've got on the desk, which we've won or we're pricing, the amount of terrace landscaping is enormous. Whereas they're not now stretching the buildings to the maximum capacity of trying to get as many desks in as possible. What you'll find is that to actually get a building to actually work for the people to come work in there, they want terraces, they want roof gardens, and there is lots of them now, you know, and it's good to see, you know, it changes the way people work, if that makes sense, you know, and it's great to see. And I think the good clients out there are really with it. They're ahead of their game, I think. Yeah. Much, and I think British Land is one of them, I think. And the British Lands are the Argents of the world, but they are ahead of their game now. And they're going back and going back through all their kind of their assets and their kind of their spaces, like some Trident Squares, like some Paddington, all the way in Broadgate, and a lot green. It's a lot greener, and they're more welcoming. They're not kind of places as you said earlier, just transit through. I want to go from that station to my office. People will go and drift through and wander through and then have a coffee and relax and chill. And that's what it's about. That's what is the changing space going out there.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at King's Cross, Malham have been involved up there for 10 years or so. Yeah. And whilst Granary Square was, you know, it's a heritage response, it's 100% hard. Mm. Coal Drops, similarly.
Hard.
As we've delivered schemes out in the last few years, they've become increasingly greener.
Yeah.
Much more domesticated. So if you look at Jellicoe Gardens, it's very much a tranquil English country garden, you know, designed by master planners, kind of Towns End, with Tom Stuart Smith adding that kind of planting layer. So, you know, we've seen things change in 10 years. And I think that's setting certainly the tone going forwards for open space.
Malham celebrated 20 years of success last year, which is incredible. What do you attribute this success to?
It's been a long 20 years, that's what I say. actually, sometimes it does feel like a long 20 years, but sometimes it feels like a short 20 years. Success, I think from the outside, people, I think, feel us as we're one of these kind of commercial, aggressive contractors who generally focus on commercial projects and et cetera. But it's just not about the money for us. We're very, we're always, from the very outset of what I kind of dreamed the company to be, is it's a brand that looks good, feels good, delivers really good quality work. And our little saying is, we never leave a bad job behind. And I believe and if you don't leave a bad job behind, you got your clients, you've got your architects, you've got your engineers, you've got your contractors, you've got, everyone moves on to the next project, you know. And if you leave that nice feeling of, these guys are really good at what they do, they're passionate about what they do, they take it to the next job. And that's the thing, is it's not letting people down. And that's generally what we're about. We never set ourselves to grow to a certain turnover, even though, yes, 5 years ago we probably set a business plan. You've got to start planning about it. And we've done the same for the next 5 years. But it's about we just love what we do, and that's it. And keeping it very simple, you know, it's about delivery. It's about, you make sure the right resource, the right delivery, the quality, the procurement, you get that correct, get the design correct. And then a huge emphasis on safety. You know, we've got a big safety team. That's the big thing. Image is very important for us. That's really where we just keep it simple. And it's just Lizzie, and it's grown with that. So,
yeah.
And I think we've got to get to a stage where we probably will hold ourselves. We're at a turnover now. We'll probably, this year, we'll do 70 million. It's making sure that everything else catches up to us, the process, the procedures, the people. We can still keep growing people within, and getting the right people into the business. And then, it's been an enjoyable 20 years. It has. And I'm looking forward to the next 20 years, you know, if I'm still around, you know, if I'm around. and Alice, you're quite new, so you kind of see from the outside. Yeah.
You're one of those right people who have joined the company. Yeah. And yeah, you are fairly new in comparison to that 20 years. Although, how long have you been at the business now?
18 months.
Yeah. 18 months. I like that.
It's like 10 years.
When do you stop saying months?
I don't know. It's like a baby, isn't
when
it?
When you get 2 years.
324 months.
Yeah. So 18 months.
So from an outsider's perspective, what do you see?
Well, I think I said it, but you know, who are this lot that turned up at the Barley Awards and walked away with the Grand Award? I mean, for me, this industry is very small, but equally, you have those that you wish to kind of, that they set the example, or you aspire to be like. And it's certainly watching Malham from the outside when I was in a previous role, it set a direction of travel for us then. Mm. You know, that's where we wanted to be. We were certainly well on our way to delivering more public realm at the time. And I know when I started out in this industry 20 years ago.
That's
interesting, isn't it?
See?
You had the three W's. So you had Whitings, Willoughbys and Waterers. And that's all our lecturer ever used to talk about. You know, those three contractors as being the pinnacle of the industry and who you should be aspiring to either work for or be like. And my career then took a few twists and turns, but you know, I looked at Mailem as being a business that was involved in everything that was good about the industry, as in all those big flagship projects. But then when I met Tom and met the team, suddenly realised that it was a very family-focused, people-focused business that wasn't commercial in the sense that I kind of thought they might be, because they work for big commercial tier ones. And we're very much, you know, that everyone's authentic in the sense that we deliver excellence. And that's starting to kind of go through everything we do.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're great at building things. You know, the quality of the work out there on the ground is exceptional, but we're starting to look at other processes. So if we deliver great work out there, why can't we deliver great processes inside? And what will be our USP going forward? Because it won't be safety. Whilst we treat it as an absolute priority, that's commonplace now. Yeah. Yes, we can look at innovations and improving the environment in which our colleagues work, but you know, we've got to focus much more on the environment and what is our, you know, our own carbon reduction journey.
Yeah.
How do we contribute back to the industry in terms of skills and training and tackling that kind of diversity conundrum? There are all sorts of things that a business like ours now needs to kind of work towards.
Because I think when you're in that growth pattern, you are growing. You know, you kind of, you don't know where you're going to get to. I think you kind of, you're always trying to get ahead of yourself on, you've just enough people to get onto the next kind of the growth pattern, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think with Mailem, and I'm probably one of the biggest critical people, I'm very critical of Mailem internally. I think we're never good enough. And I still say today we're not good enough. And I think that is always what we are. Winning a grand award, it sometimes gives you that satisfaction of winning a grand award at the Barley, and you've done it, you've won it. But you'll wake up 2-3 days later and go, okay, we've got to get on again. What's next? And how can we improve? How can we be better? And it's constant. You know, I think we still run a very flat structure. So, you know, we're very hands-on. We're very out there in the field. I'm on sites, probably all the sites, at least once or twice a month if I can. And that's very much about just not about just going down and making sure we're doing a good job, but making sure that the team see us. You know, our image is still there. We're still looking at how we feel, how we look, you know, and that's what it's got to be about. And when you've got a lot of new people, it takes a long time for that people to re-bed into the company, because we are quite quick. The projects are quick. We're finishing one job as starting the next job. And I think we are a quite quick business. And I suppose that, does it come from me? I probably am very quick. You know, I'm very kind of, it is that kind of speed of we want change, you know. But I think we've found ourselves now at the moment where we're at a stage in Mailem's kind of growth where we're just, as I said, we're trying to get everything right before we move on again, if it makes sense. You know, we've got to be better. You know, we've got a lot to improve on. And I'm looking forward to it. You know, I think we've got some really good people. And that's a big thing, is people. We've got some people who've stayed and they've grown within the company. People have come in as apprentice engineers and are now about project managers or guys starting engineers now directors. So that's where we've got to be. The best people we have are the ones we've grown. And that's got to keep happening. And the problem is the shortfall of people out there. It's quite hard to get the right people into the business, because it's getting tough out there with people getting the right kind.
The skill shortage is being felt by absolutely everybody. How are you guys approaching it? How are you tackling it?
It's tough out there. And I won't deny it. It is... I look at the resource. We sit down every Monday and look at the resource for the next kind of 6 months or a month or whatever, or week, and you look ahead to see how many people you need, basically delivering the work. And it would frighten you sometimes if you saw how many we need. You think, okay, where are they going to come from? And you know, and we brought a lot in-house. We brought a lot of training in-house. We're growing the people within. That's the big thing.
Yeah.
And really, then it's a case of just getting good people in. And if big people come in, they will then tell their friends that these people are good to work for, and that's what you've got to really look at. Look after the people who are working for you, and hopefully that kind of murmur in the street goes that these guys are good. You know, look after you. They look after you, and that's what we try to do. Look after everybody. You know, and that's the big thing. That's the foregone conclusion. You've got to keep the staff you've got happy, growing. You know, we're an EIT company 5 years, four years ago. We became an employee market trust. So it gives that power to the people. They own the company, if that makes sense. Yeah. We report to them, and that's hopefully, and they'll see the best of that in the next few years. So it's like a John Lewis model. So it's their company. So,
yeah.
And it's a big thing, you know, that all them benefits help people, you know, and we try to play hard, work hard, if that makes sense. You know, you're trying to make sure you've got loads of events, you know, you're always going out, the staff, especially younger people. We work in London predominantly. Got people come from all over UK into London. I came from Ireland into London. It's a scary place when you're on your own, and it is. So you do need to keep an eye on people and grow them within, you know, and make it a family place that they feel happy in, you know, and like every company, you go through happy parts and sad parts, because it is business critical, isn't it? You're under pressure as a company you're under pressure commercially, you're under pressure to deliver, and you're under pressure to keep the people and grow the staff. So yeah, it's with every business the same, that you've got to keep an eye on everything, really.
One of the challenges for us as a business is a lot of people ask, where do you sit? And we sit in this line between major civils ground workers and landscape contractors. So you've kind of got, whilst many people think that's great because you've got lots of resource to access, but the people up here see it as a step down.
Yeah.
And it's certainly not, because it's so complex, the stuff we do. People down here look at us and think, oh, it's a commercial animal, does commercial landscape. I just want to go and work in a garden. And because of the way in which we want to deliver our projects, if we look at the Malham Landscapes world, we want horticulturalists.
Yeah.
We want people that have got that ability to look at the big yellow dot in the sky and manage landscapes and create landscapes in a way that is driven by principles of horticulture rather than just see, do, take a prescriptive specification and follow it. So we do struggle, I think, because of the very nature of what we do.
Yeah.
But equally, you know, like everybody else, we've got that obligation to attract people into the industry, sell the industry in what we do. And, you know, the millions of people walk through a lot of our open spaces, and I think probably take them for granted or have absolutely no appreciation of the technical skill that's been required to build them. That's absolutely certain. I'd love to stand in King's Cross and question people as they walk through it,
just to
understand how we built it.
Yeah, that's so true. So was the idea between Malham Landscapes to try and attract those horticulturalists a bit more?
Well, there is this. So if you look at a business and how a business grows, and ultimately we are in business because we price tenders. So bringing a service in-house enables you to be slightly more competitive, but equally stay in control of that service delivery. So, you know, ideally there'll be an increase in quality because you control it fully.
Mm.
It needed to be a different brand identity.
100%.
Both our clients and consultants watching us. There's nothing worse than somebody saying, the person over there in the orange high-vis was laying curbs one day, now he's putting trees in. whilst it would be two entirely different individuals, we needed an identity that kind of said we are a specialist soft landscape part of the business.
Yeah.
So that's why it's got a different brand. And then, you know, aspirationally as it grows, if you're then going from B2B to B2C, you know, client typing in Malham is going to be doing my domestic back garden, up pops Battersea Power Station. you know, it's not going to do well for business. So it enables us, you know, in time, once we've got there, to have a very kind of, I suppose, customer focused identity, which works with the scale of what that business is. So,
and it'll take time. We know Malham Landscapes is the baby in the and it will take time to grow, and like Malham itself took a long time to get to where it wanted to get to. So it's we want to grow it at the pace that we believe, you know, it can do. And Alice have been the real expert of this. It's for him to grow that business is important to Malum. You know that we see that we are, and it will bring a lot of different people into it, and hopefully bring a lot of people who are used to that kind of domestic market and that kind of real soft market into a business where they're not scared of looking at a public realm project and doing and managing the whole project. You know, and that would be hopefully the success of it. You know, the people will come in into Malum Landscapes and kind of will then kind of want to drift into running iconic projects. So yeah, it's hopefully that's the plan for it in here.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Yeah, it really is.
It is.
Talking about some of the other challenges that you've kind of faced over this 20 years, very recently, lots of challenges around, you know, material shortages, inflation. How did that feel for you guys? How did it affect you? And how are you doing now, I suppose?
I suppose you look at here, we're now in March 23. I think you can get a sense of that. I think the inflationary challenges have probably flattened a little bit. Mm. You know, I think you look at a year ago when we were kind of coming out of COVID, we all thought we were through the worst 2 years of our life. And then I remember looking at February going, this is a good year. It's going to be a really good year. You know, we're looking good and we've got some really good work and got some good margins looking ahead. And then the Ukraine war came, and then all of a sudden inflation went out of control. And like every business, you've got to look at it. You've got to control it. You've got to look at it. You've got to good clients. You can talk to them about it. You know, I think you've got to be honest with them. Some clients that you work for, it's the fact of life. You take a project on lump sum fixed price, you take the risk and the opportunity with that. So you've just got to make sure that the controls we have in place and the kind of monthly reviews of projects and commercial reviews of projects and how you're placing orders and how you're employing people and wages and all that, you've got to work with it. And the last 12 months has been challenging. Yeah. And if anyone turns around and says it hasn't, it's like, wow, it's been as challenging as I've seen. And I would say more challenging than COVID. You know, COVID is a different kind of scenario, but financially it was challenging. Whereas in COVID, I suppose every company had backing. You had the government backing. You had COVID kind of staff when staff were sitting at home doing nothing. But when inflation, the government's not going to put their hand in the pocket for inflation, are they? So you've won projects 2 years in advance based on a price priced in 2 years ago. So inflation was tough. But I do believe today, I think we're definitely seeing it. It's flattened off. I do believe it has. It's controllable now. It's a lot more controllable.
Definitely.
And then I think that is definitely also giving confidence to the clients that they can go start building again. Because that was the worry, that the biggest risk was that everyone put the handbrake up and that all the projects just stopped because the clients were not willing to actually take the chance and grow. But I think we worked with some good clients and they're all confident behind it. And I think at tender stage, you now go with an open mind to the client and go, there's certain stuff we can fix, prices, there's certain stuff we can't. And then working out some kind of negotiation of, okay, if the price goes up, it goes down, it's there. It's an open book scenario so that they can see what's happening and then they can make the decision on risk as much as we can. So yeah, it's been a tricky 12 months. You know, it has. It's been a tricky 3 years, you know. Good thing we're all still here, you know. grayer and older, but we're still here, you know. Yeah.
Definitely. And I think my role, and certainly one of Tom's aspirations for the business when I joined, was to diversify the client base to give us that greater level of resilience if, you know, we were to experience a similar set of circumstances again. So, you know, getting well into the local authority market has proved quite beneficial.
Okay.
You know, kind of changed the types of projects we're delivering and the types of clients we're working for. You know, complementing what we're really good at. That's the kind of key thing. And then I believe we've kind of flushed out the worst of that kind of inflationary risk with projects that maybe, you know, priced in 2020 and have been delivered. And then going forwards, you know, we're looking at jobs 2025, 2026. And the difficulty for our pre-construction team is that you're trying to give a client the best advice at this stage, whether you're cost planning or returning a bid, but you can't fix it. You know, anyone that's got a crystal ball that tells you how much things are going to cost in 2026, I want one of them. But, you know, as Tom described, what we're trying to do is say, well, for the last 20 years, that material has done this.
Yeah.
We can broadly give you certainty in that, but other areas we just have to identify as there's no fixed price lump sum provision here. We'll have to deal with it when it when it arises in an open book way. So
yeah,
and also, and I suppose also for staff, we last year, we as an EOT, which is the good success of an employment operated company trust, is that, you know, it gets paid bonuses every year.
Yeah.
You know, we look at the ball, we look at what we've made, and some money goes back into the pot and gets shared amongst the staff. And then in January, we'd be paid an allowance towards inflation. So we gave everyone £1,000 allowance tax-free end of January. And that does help people. I think you look at,
really,
you're trying to keep people. We definitely did pay rises in July. We look at them again once a year. And I think that helps the inflationary issues with your staff, which is always a big thing, because you've got to keep an eye on it, because it is a hard time, you know, whereas especially, and I talked about earlier about youngsters coming from kind of all around UK into London. London is expensive.
Yeah.
You know, the rent's expensive, travel's expensive.
Yeah.
So if we can create an environment where we aid that situation, where then people, they feel protected, that's where we've got to really keep that's where we really got to keep ourselves on the ball with people, and then you'll keep people won't leave.
And imagine looking after their mental health is also a huge part of that, as well.
Yeah.
What are you guys doing in that area?
Reinventing ourselves. You know, I think we were quite pioneering, I'm going to say 5 years ago. Probably had 18 mental health first aiders at various levels in the business.
Mm.
And we're looking at that with a fresh set of eyes, because, of course, the number you've got doesn't necessarily make you a better employer.
That's very true, yeah.
No.
Awareness is incredibly important. Mm. You know, everyone having an awareness of mental health, you know, what's good mental health, what's bad mental health. But equally, if you put, you know, 10 mugshots up on a wall, you can guarantee that one of them's going to be the person that everybody goes to. And one of the things that I think is missing, and has only really been considered with, you know, the courses that Perennial have developed, is who's there for the mental health first aider?
Yeah.
What support do they get? Because they might be dealing with some quite challenging situations from somebody disclosing some of their own troubles. So we certainly put a hold on what we were doing in terms of mental health first aid training, so that we could really consider the appropriateness of supporting our people who volunteer to become mental health first aiders. But as Tom said, we're a very visible management team. You know, the SMT and the senior leadership team are very visible out there on the ground, and the health and well-being of our people is of paramount importance to us. And I think through various initiatives like Dragon Boat Races for Crashing, Mental Health, you know, World Cup, you know, we're very much involved in a number of industry.
Yeah, we run a five-side. So. The guys play five-side every Tuesday. We put on four pitches every Tuesday, and teams turn up from all around the company. So it makes that kind of bonding together make sense. You know, in a couple of weeks' time, we're trying to run a financial workshop where someone comes in. I'm not sure how regular we're going to run those, where someone come in and we say this person's in the office and they can go talk to them about their finances, because sometimes, so it's like an open door for scenario. It's pure private. You deal with them. And some people get mental health. A lot of people get caught because the fact they, it's money. It's money driven.
Yeah,
and
one
it's,
of the biggest issues.
And it's very much, it's kind of under pressure. I don't know what to do. I got that loan. I don't know what to do. How do I come out of it? Mm. And that's the big thing we need to put forward. And with our new head of kind of check, Michelle Rice, who's joined us in the last kind of year-ish, she's got a lot of good ideas. You know, we tried to run a soup kitchen this January, which just kind of got caught, but we want to run it next year. Mm. So after Christmas, that we provide all the guys soup twice a week, you know, for lunch, so that they can. It just creates stuff where, you know, it takes pressure off people.
Yeah,
that's what we've got to do, and we take pressure off people. You'll keep the workforce. You know.
Yeah. And of course, not everybody wants to talk to somebody that they work with either, but you're a perennial partner, right? So that's quite a good opportunity for people to go to an outside
definitely
source.
And I guess there's the, you know, perennial partner is one avenue of signposting. Mm-hmm. You know, we share the initiatives with colleagues. You've got Crash, who are pretty central to the construction industry. You've got Heads Up. There's lots of partners that we work with to make it appropriate for all of our staff. We've got our own kind of employee assistance program. So, yeah, not everybody wants to run and talk to someone in the business. But equally, if you're visible, you can gauge somebody's situation.
Keep an eye on them, yeah.
You know, you kind of know when people are down, and whether that pressure is because of work or the particular point in a project or whether they've got something going on at home and supporting people through, you know, good and bad, you know, celebrating success, because, you know, there's nothing worse than not getting that pat on the back when you have been successful as much as all the you know, the problems people might experience. Yeah. So,
and the Grand Award, I think we did after about 2 weeks after Grand Award, we won the Grand Award. We sent out, we got cakes made, a big cake for every single site. I think it was 25 cakes. So it went out to every single site, whether it was one cake or two cakes of sites. And we made the guys understand that we'd won something, you know, and so that the guys on the ground understand that you all are, thank you very much for all of it. So, so we kind of, it was good. You know, it was just
nothing
kind of
better than celebrating with cake as well.
Can't beat it. Can't beat it. Definitely not.
You mentioned working with local authorities a bit more. How successful do you think the levelling up is going to be for communities and local spaces?
Interesting question.
Yeah.
Do I answer that honestly? Of course I will.
Honestly, yeah.
When you look at, I guess, the aspirations of levelling up, I'm all for it because I think there'll be huge investment in raising a kind of a benchmark for everybody. But we're trying to grow the business outside of London. And the one thing that we're struggling with is that benchmark and affordability. We're almost seeing it in the pounds per square metre being spent on public realm. So you could almost go from anywhere between £2,000 per square metre in London to £500 in Birmingham.
Oh, wow.
And the cost of materials aren't necessarily very different.
It's no different.
So you can't necessarily say London is the primary driver behind why it might cost more. Because, you know, material labour is pretty much
very similar.
On
yeah.
par.
Yeah.
And similarly in Ireland. So, you know, we're working in Dublin and it's been very difficult to break that market. But certainly in the, you know, mainland UK, levelling up, I suppose, is going to be seen much more between London and Birmingham with HS2. And I suppose time will tell.
If it keeps going further.
Yeah.
On. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. There's some big schemes, right? You know, like some big cities like Manchester, some really big planned schemes for them, for them places. You know? Yeah. Yeah. I think for us, focus would be go any further out. We are focused on Birmingham, focused on London. I think that's what our key thing. We worked in Birmingham before. And as I said, there was no difference in labour, no difference in material costs. And it's just to make sure Birmingham have got the aspirations to keep going with. And there's some that you look at the schemes at the moment. There's some really beautiful schemes being planned for Birmingham. And hopefully they should go ahead.
So what does the future hold for Maylim? Where's your focus going to be? You mentioned kind of you've reached that turnover point and you're now looking internally a little bit more. But where else? I know you're carbon neutral, right? So you're working towards net zero.
Yeah.
How is that going?
So we're at a stage now where we're producing our carbon reduction plan. Mm-hmm. It certainly aligns with some of our kind of strategic clients and their need. I suppose their need, it's inherent that our tier ones are ultimately looking at the supply chain, not just Maylim, but the supply chain to solve the net zero conundrum. So we are doing quite a lot of work in that area for the business. I can't say we're going to be fully electric by a certain date because the technology's got to come up. Yeah. I think it was difficult enough getting Cat 6 compliant kind of telehandlers out of manufacturers because of kind of the COVID and Brexit impacts. But I suppose environment's one thing, social value's another. So that's very much an area of focus, particularly with our local authority work. We're looking inwards. So, you know, growth, we've achieved growth over the last, 20 years, but particularly the last five. And we just want to make sure that we're not overstretching that very visible leadership team because there's only so many of us and we can only get out so much. So more sites there are, the less of us they see. So that's really important we maintain that. Doing quite a lot of research with Cranfield on our soils project because our projects are getting greener. We need more technical competence to explain to our clients the importance of investing in good quality, high performing soil. And perhaps the outcome of that may well benefit both ourselves and the wider industry as we kind of get hard results for their ability to sequester carbon, their ability to contribute towards good water management. All principles that we quote, but
yeah.
I don't think there's enough out there to demonstrate the true value of it.
Oh, interesting.
Mainland landscapes will be, you know, a focus of
huge focus.
Growth, and then geography and specialisms. Yeah. So, you know, we're looking outside of London for growth if the projects are right and they don't distract us from what we're doing within zones 1 to 3.
Yeah, I think we look at 20 years. I think, as I said earlier, we are looking in. I think we're trying to look at the team. We work with a company called Aspire, who work on our strategic coaching, who work with all the leadership team and the management team to kind of try and ask the questions: where we're going to be in 5 years, where we're going to be in 10 years, who's going to be, where's the succession plan, who's going to replace us. You know, you've got to start looking at that. I'm probably one of the oldest guys there. It's making sure we don't run out of steam and that the people below can keep growing within the company. Geographically, as Alice said, yes, we are focused on Birmingham. You know, we've gone back to back with clients up there for some projects where they've been awarded. Dublin was always a focus about 3 or 4 years ago. We looked at that and we had a real good client, IPUT, come over to see our work in London, and they wanted us over there. Financially, we've now secured our first project. It starts the 1st of May for a developer called Sisk and for the developer called IPUT for LinkedIn's head office in Dublin. So really beautiful.
Exciting.
Yeah, really beautiful public space. And then, yeah, I suppose is it growth? It's really making sure we're still good at what we do. You know, make sure don't lose focus on that. Make sure, you know, make sure we kind of, I'd say, level up over the next couple of years, really figure out what we want to make sure that we are better at what we do everywhere. And then, you know, making sure we're not kind of, that there is a lot of more substance in stuff we do and, you know, environmental and carbon, making sure we do look at the fact that all our vehicles will be hydrogen powered, you know, plant in the next kind of 7 or 8 years, and all the actual vans are up there electric. It's just a lot. There's a lot going on.
Yeah. You know, have you done any trials with electric vehicles?
We have. We got two of mainland landscapes.
Well, mainland landscapes or vehicles, fossil fuel free.
They are fossil free.
Wow.
All the vans are electric. All the tools are electric. It has challenges, without a doubt, because charging points are still just not there.
Mm.
You know, so it's getting better. I said the infrastructure's got to catch up. You know, and that's the big thing for us. If we can get mainland landscapes to work that way, and kind of, because no fuel whatsoever, that is a great kind of selling point. And then mainland, then really it's a case of it's how quick the likes of Kubota, JCB can catch up with kind of the investment on hydrogen plant. You know, and I saw the first JCB hydrogen plant rolled out this week. So it'd be interesting to see how that works.
Yeah.
You know, all our plant now is category 5. We're fully compliant. All our vehicles are fully ULEZ compliant. And that was our big investment over the last 2 or 3 years. We've invested almost £1 million in plant every year in the last 3 years.
Wow.
So we've caught up. And that's our big SP is self-delivery, have our own plant, have our own yard, have our own people. We don't have any debt as a company. That's where we want to be.
Yeah.
And I think that won't change. That's the big thing for us.
Mm.
You know, and just enjoy it. You know, enjoy the next 20 years.
Oh,
I'm not sure I'm going to be around, but who knows, you know?
I feel like they'll never get rid of you, Tom.
They'll probably wheel me out and go, you've had enough, it's go. So that's it's good. And I think Alistair, it's having people like Alistair and the kind of, like Liam, our operational director, and the newer people in our company, where we can grow businesses, you know, and grow. They're the future of Mainland. They're the ones who are going to run it and deliver it and be that. But for us, it's making sure that, before I leave, is making sure that there's a culture of what we are about. It's that, we call it the Mainland Way. What does Mainland Way stand for? And I think over the next 12 months, we're really trying to put some meat behind the Mainland Way. It's just not about, you know, we're friendly, we're culture, we love your people to work with. Actually, what is it? And make sure that's embedded. You know, it's the way we look, the way we feel, the way we deliver work. And if we can get that right, that's going to be our big focus. You know, we've got a lot to do, and win more barley awards, really.
I think when you asked me what my opinion was looking in, when you look at a business and its future, you know, I've worked for a range of businesses, and that can be anything from a private equity backed business to a family owned business. You look at an exit strategy for the owners, and certainly Tom and Jared have done exactly the right thing. They've demonstrated to colleagues within Mainland that the future is the colleagues within Milan. And it's giving them and equipping them with the ability for Milan to continue beyond the kind of the Gerard and Tom's kind of involvement in the business. And that's what the future's about, really. You know, the next 20 years are very much about the people taking that opportunity to move Malin forward to the next phase.
I'll be allowed to come to the Barley Awards still as a guest, you know.
Absolutely.
But I'm not going anywhere yet.
I can see him being a judge.
I've got if they'll have me.
Yeah, you'll be one of the top tables.
Holding us to account. Malin's exciting. It's we've got to hear by hard work, and I think that hard work won't change. It has to keep going. We've got to look at, are we excited about opportunities, future projects? Yes. Are we excited about going to Dublin? Excited and nervous, if that makes sense. You know, and I think if you don't have a bit of nervousness about you, I think you need to have that little kind of, when you walk onto a project and go, okay, we've got to get this done. And that's what, once we got to keep that going, and we and the people who work for us have got to have that ability of that passion. Once they've got the passion and the ability, we'll grow people. And that's what we always look for. We don't look for the brightest people in the room. We look for the people who actually enjoy what they do. And it should be and about want to deliver good projects. And we like jobs which are tricky. And that's generally where we put our hand up. And that's and as Alice said earlier, we're the ones who generally people are running away from. We're like the foot soldier. We're running towards them and thinking, right, how do we do this? And there's a lot to do. And they've got some really good competitors out there. You know, and that's a big thing, which is really nice. And there's some good people. You know, there's some good companies out there who are growing really well. The likes of Frost, the likes of kind of Willoughby's. We keep close to them, guys. Willoughby's, we can't deny, Willoughby's were our soft landscape and delivery partner for a long time, even before I became Malin. And we still owe a lot to Willoughby's and had the greatest respect for them. You know, I still see the future of the big projects where it needs JVs like of Willoughby's and Malin joining together. I still see that as a big thing, you know, the real big chunky landscape project. So yeah, there's a lot to do. And we want to be, and we don't want to flood the Barley with loads of Barley entries. We want to make sure we pick the right jobs that we believe are the best job for that year or the best two jobs for them years, and that's it. Yeah, and this year, we've probably got a couple we want to put forward which are completely different.
Ooh, exciting.
Yeah, so we'll see. And I think that's where we've got to be. I think we're still growing. We're still growing not as in turnover, we're still growing as people. We're still new to the business, I think, the industry. Yeah. I still think we are. Even 20 years is still new. Mm. You know, and we want to make sure we are still here in 20 years. And that's the problem. Companies do fall over, and we've got to make sure that we're not one of those. And you've got to make sure you pick the right client all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'm so excited to see where the next 20 years take you.
Yeah, see how it goes.
The last question for you guys is, what plant would you take to a desert island? So desert islander style, doesn't have to survive there necessarily. Although if you want to be extra smart and tricky, then feel free.
I think it's mine's the rose. You know, at least it grows. It looks beautiful. I can smell it. And when they find me dead in my skeleton, at least I've got a rose beside me. So that's probably a real bad analogy, but yeah. Wow. Well, that's me. Yeah.
Any rose in particular?
I like a red rose. I'm just a red rose person. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, maybe it's a bit romantic about me. I don't know. But that's what I like. I've got loads of roses in my garden, and that's what I like looking after. So
yeah.
And I like seeing them grow. I like seeing them flourish through the summer. And, you know, it's good. And that's me. I'm a very simple person, you know.
Yeah, my grandparents grow roses, so they've got a place in my heart as well.
Oh, yeah.
I think I'd have the same.
Yeah, they're good. Yeah, I think, on a desert island, they're probably not in much use to me, to be honest, you know, on a desert island. But they'll...
They'll bring you joy.
They'll bring joy, yeah. They won't feed me, but they'll bring joy.
You'd think you'd take food, wouldn't you? But mine would be a Daphne Bula Jacqueline Postel. I think plant and plant association is about memory. And in the depths of winter, it's got a fragrance like nothing else, and it just reminds me of going to my nan's.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Yeah. Both pick very beautifully smelling plants.
Plants, yeah. We need food, though.
What does that say about us?
I don't know. It's romantic.
You're having to starve to death as long as it smells nice.
Yeah. No, that's it. That's it.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been really interesting to chat all through those big topics with you guys. And it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
I'm Rachel Forsyth, and this has been the Horticulture Week podcast. Make sure you never miss one. Subscribe or follow Hort Week podcast via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your preferred podcast platform. If you are interested in producing a podcast with Horticulture Week, email us at hortweek@haymarket.com. Huge thank you again to Tom and Alistair, and goodbye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.